Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke in for Joe Donahue this morning, and it is time to hippity hoppity to our book pick selections. Our excellent independent booksellers in studio this morning are Amy Zimmerman of the Chatham Bookstore in Chatham, New York. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
I portmanteaued your name with the word Chatham.
Thank you so much.
And that's what happened. The Chatham Bookstore. Goodness gracious. And Susanna Hermans of Oblong Books in Rhinebeck and Millerton, New York is here. Good morning, Susanna.
Hey, Sarah.
I'm sorry I didn't do any tricks with your bookstore name.
Quite all right.
Your name. Also known as mistakes. I'm so excited as ever to hear what you have brought in to suggest for us to read today. Let's start with you, Amy.
Sounds good. So my first pick is an upcoming memoir from Melissa Phoebos. It's out on June 3rd.
I'm a little bit friends with Melissa Phoebos.
Stop.
And I love her very much.
Oh my god, she is so cool.
She's really cool.
Okay.
I did meet her through
the offline.
Through the station. She came in for an interview and we're, you know, at least friends on social, and I'm very excited about this book as well. Sorry to interrupt. Proceed.
No, that is okay. She is like always a must read for me. So that is really cool to hear. And you can get those pre-orders in with your local indie bookstore. So yeah, like I was saying, her book Girlhood, I don't know if you read that or that was what you discussed. It's like one of my favorite things ever written about being a teenage girl. And this latest work, The Dry Season, deals with some similar themes of desires, both innate and imposed, and the lifelong struggle to differentiate between the two. The book covers a period of time in which the author chose to be celibate after realizing that her adult life had been dictated by these romantic relationships that had begun to feel more compulsive than entirely consensual. When this area of Phoebos's life recedes, she's amazed by what rushes in to take its place. It's as if by removing one sense, everything else, her friendships, writing, work, walking, dancing, becomes infinitely heightened. I was particularly struck by the author's descriptions of her newfound love for her bed, which she begins luxuriating in for hours after she wakes up.
Ooh, dream. Dream come true.
Right?
Let's all explore that.
I think we should. She just describes how it was this place that in the past was always this like kind of tense site of negotiation between her and a partner. And suddenly she has no one else to consider, explain herself to, or perform for. Her bed is entirely her own. It's really, really beautiful. And along with these more diaristic entries, she also looks at scholarship around celibacy, love and sex addiction, and romance and desire more broadly. I love the in-depth research on female celibates and mystics, women who were able to free themselves from societal gender norms and forge new positions of power within the church, who through prayer and study were able to access pleasure and enlightenment so genuine and pure that it often looked like madness. Phoebos is a really sharp observer of human relationships and the power dynamics that undergird them. She draws fascinating connections between her personal life and years spent working in restaurants, which taught her to be hyper aware of the desires of others, what they wanted from her, and how best to manipulate that attention for profit and survival. This book asks what it might mean to remove ourselves from economies of desire, if only for a year, to exist as a body that is not always wanted or wanting, but is rather self-sufficient, satisfied, and full.
That's The Dry Season by Melissa Phoebos, a new memoir by a fantastic writer. We're so excited about that book. Again, The Dry Season by Melissa Phoebos. Susanna, where are you starting today?
Okay, so I'm starting with the memoir Careless People by Sarah Wynne Williams. Now, this got a lot of press. It's been out, I want to say, like a month and a half. It is a tell-all memoir by a woman who worked at Facebook. And Facebook's actually suing her, and I believe she had to cancel her entire book tour. She's, like, not allowed to publicly speak about the book. Hmm. You know, you probably couldn't have paid me to read anything about Facebook. I don't like it.
Sure.
I don't like it. I'm not interested in it. I think they're probably, like, pretty evil. But I just thought I would read a couple pages, and she pulled me into this book right away. It is an absolute page-turner. Basically, like, she spent a year trying to get Facebook to hire her because she noticed that she's a diplomat. She's from Australia. she noticed that they had like seemingly no plan or awareness that the product they were creating might have an effect on politics internationally and on like actual things happening to real people in other countries, especially undeveloped countries that like have no infrastructure but have internet or have, you know, cell phones. And she finally convinces Facebook to hire her. She's working like directly with Sheryl Sandberg. And the lack of attention to the consequences of their actions. I mean, there's a reason it's called Careless People. It is shocking, even though you think you know, but you don't know. Like, it's really wild. And she's an incredible storyteller, not to mention the workplace nonsense that she has to deal with, especially as a woman and a young mother in this universe. It is absolutely riveting. It is as horrifying as you think it will be, but it is certainly worth a read if you can stomach it.
That is Careless People by Sarah Wynne Williams. Wynne is with a Y. Sarah Wynne Williams, Careless People. Amy Zimmerman, what's next?
So my next pick also comes out in early June, and I cannot wait for everyone to read it so I can keep talking about it. This is The Mobius Book by Catherine Lacey. Lacey is an author who I've struggled with just a little bit in the past because I have so many friends who love her work. And I just couldn't find like that one book yet that really resonated with me. And this is definitely the one.
Catherine Lacey wrote this one for you.
I think so. Yeah. To describe this book as is to almost spoil this book. So I'll, you know, show some restraint. But I can say that it is a genre blend of fiction and memoir. But the fiction and the memoir, much like the eponymous Mobius strip, kind of bend to meet each other in the middle. The fiction is a compact little novella about two friends who are dealing with the aftermath of romantic relationships gone awry and meet each other at that crossroads to reminisce about their past selves. The memoir element is about the demise of Lacey's own long-term relationship, which ended suddenly and dramatically, and the various trips and friends and coping mechanisms that she turned to try and process and rebuild. Real life clearly influenced art here, and the Mobius book is a testament to that process. It invites readers to deconstruct the novella as they read it by tracing its origins and inspirations, while also highlighting how fiction can approach truths that memoir maybe can't or wouldn't even dare to. As a novel nerd, which I imagine you both sort of identify as well, I was just so geeked out and energized by what Catherine Lacey managed to pull off here. It's a really mind-blowing manipulation of the form to incredible effect. If it was just the memoir or just the novella, it would already be compelling and gorgeous. But the way she plays the two halves against each other is definitely what I'll keep returning to and thinking about for a really long time.
The Mobius Book by Catherine Lacey. And now you two will have a bidding war between your stores for which can put out the t-shirt or tote bag that says novel nerd first. The Mobius Book by Catherine Lacey. Susanna, what's up next?
Next, I have the novel Rabbit Moon by Jennifer Hay. Jennifer Hay is a beloved author who I had never read before. And I've just picked this up on a whim. And it is absolutely beautiful. It is a novel about a 22-year-old girl who's living in China. Her mother gets a call that she's been hit by a car. And her mother and her father, who are estranged, must come together, travel to China, and try to see what happened and why this happened to her. It's an incredible novel about family. We get the story of them arriving in China, but then we also get the backstory of what she was doing there and how she came to be on the street corner in the middle of the night, 500 miles from where she was supposed to be. It's absolutely excellent.
Jennifer Hay's new book is Rabbit Moon, Rabbit Moon by Jennifer Hay. And Hay is H-I-G-H, in case you're listening. But also, of course, the books are posted online at our website at wamc.org/roundtable. Amy.
So my next few picks are going to be from our bookstore owner, Sharon. Although this first one, Isola by Allegra Goodman, is one of my new favorites as well. So this is a dual endorsement. This novel is based on the real life of Marguerite de la Roque de Roberval. Excuse my French on that one. She's a 16th century French noblewoman. The actual story here is incredible. This woman spent several years barely surviving after being abandoned on an island near Quebec with her lover and her loyal and resourceful maid. And in the novel, of course, you get to read the slightly fictionalized account of how she ended up there. The island is uninhabited, it's very cold, and she has virtually no food or shelter. This is a classic survival story in that you'll spend the entire book riveted, but also asking yourself what you would do in her situation. And Sharon and I both agreed we definitely would not have survived. Like, probably first day, we would have been out of there.
Sure.
This is a real life adventure story, but it's also a love story, as well as a brutal depiction of what it was like to be a titled woman of means, who is also little more than a piece of property with virtually no rights or agency. Despite, or maybe because of, her extraordinary and harrowing experience, Margaret ultimately defies social convention and takes control of her own destiny. This is just really well-written and highly readable historical fiction.
It's Isola by Allegra Goodman. That book was featured on The Book Show, and you can hear Joe Donahue's interview with Allegra Goodman online at WMC.org. There really is a lot to check out on the website, y'all.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Susanna, what's up next for you?
Next up, so there's a book I'm sure I talked about on the show before, Vera Wang's Unsolicited Advice for Murderers by Jesse Su Tanto. Book two is out now. Ooh. Vera Wang's Guide to Snooping on a Dead Man. So this character in the first book, she is an older woman who owns a tea shop in San Francisco. She opens the door to her tea shop one morning, and there is a dead man in her tea shop. And instead of calling the cops, she's like, well, I'm just going to solve this on my own. And she sets out to do that. Mm-hmm. In book two, all of our favorite characters are back. In this one, a young woman stumbles across Vera's tea shop and is looking for help. Vera quickly finds out that her friend has gone missing. He's a social media influencer. He's vanished off the face of the earth. Shortly thereafter, his body is found. Who's going to solve the case? It's Vera. She is one of the most wonderful characters I've read in mystery. It's a cozy mystery. It is the perfect book to just like make you feel good, but also to solve a crime. And I just love the way that Vera is everybody's favorite auntie.
Favorite aunties. Unsung heroes of the world.
Yes.
Vera Wang's Guide to Snooping on a Dead Man by Jesse Q. Su Tanto. Amy, what's next for you?
So FDR Drive is the latest detective novel by James Comey. High-profile guy. Sarah, I think you may have heard of him.
Yeah, we've heard of him. He's been doing things.
Yeah, he's been up to some stuff. He's probably most famous for being the FBI director during the first Trump administration, who was fired for his perceived lack of loyalty. Comey's been very busy ever since, though. This is his third novel featuring a cast of characters that includes now senior prosecutor Nora, who is rumored to be based on Comey's own daughter, her police detective sidekick, who is also her mother's lover, her own lover, and various other diverse and entertaining characters. And I do mean diverse. Comey makes a point of having Black, brown, female, and gay characters to the point that it can be a little heavy-handed. Not sure we'd actually hear the assistant to the United States attorney introduce herself by saying, "So nice to meet you. I'm Georgine Jackson, and I work every day with these fine white men." It's a little cringy, but Comey definitely knows the inner workings of law enforcement. And as you breeze through the snappy dialogue, you will enjoy a classic police procedural involving attempts to deal with a MAGA-type social media influencer and his terrifying followers. The specific New York City references are an added bonus. It's fun to be able to picture exactly where the action is happening, including, of course, on the much derided FDR Drive.
FDR Drive by former FBI Director James Comey. That's FDR Drive by James Comey. Susanna, what do you have next?
Next up, we have a new book by one of my favorite authors, Kevin Wilson. He's written many books, including The Family Fang. His new one is called Run for the Hills. And in this one, a woman is working on her family farm. She opens the door, and there's a man outside, and he says, "Hey, I think we have the same dad." And come to find out that her father, who had left many years prior, has had many families and has spent maybe, 5 to 7, 8, 10 years with each family, sort of over each decade of his life. And there are siblings throughout the country.
How exhausting.
Truly, truly. So the two of them get in his PT Cruiser and decide they're going to take a road trip across the country to meet these other siblings. This book is so lovely. I read it in one sitting. It's very heartwarming. It's funny. He's just such a wonderful writer, and anywhere he decides to take me, I am ready for it.
That is Run for the Hills by Kevin Wilson, a new book from one of Susanna's favorite authors. And that carries a lot of water here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Very important opinion. Run for the Hills by Kevin Wilson. Amy, what do you have next?
So the last pick from our bookstore owner, Sharon, is Melting Point by Rachel Cockerell. This is a book composed of actual excerpts from contemporary news reports, letters, interviews, and speeches. It's a historical collage that reads like a novel. It began as a memoir of Cockerell's British family, but that initial exploration led to her discovery of her great-grandfather's involvement in early Zionist experiments, which then became her main subject. The Zionist movement was born in the early 1900s, partly as a result of the horrific pogroms that were taking place in Russia. Although the stated goal was always a return to Palestine, practicality led many to search for what they saw as an interim solution. The British offered land in Uganda, which it turns out was actually in Kenya. I guess they just didn't realize. This proposal was seriously considered, but ultimately rejected due to the lack of infrastructure, not to mention, of course, the fact that the existing inhabitants didn't really want them there. Australia was a hard no, as was Mesopotamia. There was a short-lived attempt to export Russian Jews to Galveston, Texas. This was shut down by the U.S. government when World War I broke out and halted all overseas travel. Through the exclusive use of primary sources, Cockerell has produced a vivid account of the political and historical pressures that led to the birth of Israel, including the pain of those who fled there, as well as the suffering of those who were consequently expelled from their homes.
That is Melting Point by Rachel Cockerell. Melting Point by Rachel Cockerell. Susanna.
Next up is a novel called Friends of the Museum by Heather McGowan.
I'm in already.
Yes.
I like friends and museums.
So imagine the Met.
I can. Parts of it.
This is set at a museum that is not called the Met, but it is the Met in New York. And it is set over 24 hours, minute by minute, with a constantly ticking clock as we watch what is happening in this museum. The museum director is putting out fires. The chef is preparing in the kitchen. There's stuff going on behind the scenes about where maybe those artifacts shouldn't have come from. And in the evening is going to be their big gala. And of course, everything that could go wrong does go wrong. The pace of this book is extraordinary. That's why it was brought to my attention. People were like, you just absolutely have to read this because what she's doing in this novel is extraordinary. And it absolutely is. Every section of the book is time stamped and you are just following along and you can't wait to see how it's all going to happen or how it's all going to fall apart.
It sounds like a great escape. I'm very interested in that one, adding it to my to-read list. Friends of the Museum by Heather McGowan. Friends of the Museum by Heather McGowan. Amy, you have one more pick for us.
Sounds good. That's on my to-read list, too. Yeah. When I was watching the Met Gala, the red carpet, I was like, I can't believe they haven't written a novel about this already. So
there it is.
Glad it's out there. The last book I want to recommend is Half the Kingdom by Laure Segal. As booksellers, we all have our favorite genres and subjects, and unfortunately, we all also have our own blind spots. And a recent kind of gap in my reading that I've been thinking about a lot is that I could really read more books with older protagonists and that deal with topics of aging head on. So it's no coincidence that for our next fiction book club, we picked this great little novel, which takes place in and around an emergency room, focusing on a mysterious and somewhat zany illness that affects every visitor over the age of 62. This novel offers a powerful critique of ageism, of all of the tiny but accumulating assumptions that we make about older people, our collective tendency to dismiss and ignore the elderly and infirmed. The numerous, extremely colorful characters that populate this novel act as a strong rebuke. They are at turns difficult, extraordinary, extremely astute, and deeply flawed. Segal's description of aging and memory loss specifically will really stick with me, as will her masterful depiction of the distance between generations as these characters try to reach one another across an ever-widening gap of experience and misunderstanding. And we'll be meeting on June 12th to discuss Half the Kingdom, so if you're in the larger Chatham area, you definitely have time to read this book and join us to discuss.
That is Half the Kingdom by Laure Segal, and the Chatham Bookstore's book club will meet on June 12th, you said?
June 12th.
June 12th, of course, to discuss the book, which sounds lovely. Sounds very beautiful. Susanna, your final book?
My last book is Turning to Birds by Lily Taylor. Lily Taylor is best known to us as an actress, mm-hmm. but she is also a birder and a lifelong lover of birds. And this is a beautiful essay collection where she talks about what these birds have meant to her and her life. She's also, I was delighted to find out, a board member of the Audubon Society and a number of other birding groups. And we're really looking forward to hosting her on May 29th, next Thursday, at Morton Memorial Library in Rhinecliffe.
The beautiful Morton Memorial Library in Rhinecliffe, New York. You can go and attend an Oblong Books event, which are always perfectly run, beautifully hosted by everybody who works for the store. Again, that is Turning to Birds by Lily Taylor. It's The Power and Beauty of Noticing is the subtitle of that book, which I think is a lovely sentiment. Amy and Susanna's lists are posted online at wamc.org/roundtable. Chatham Bookstore has a web presence, of course, at chathambookstore.indielight.org, and you can find Oblong Books at oblongbooks.com. Amy Zimmerman and Susanna Hermans, you are marvelous, and we adore you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks so much for having us.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.